Hello, everyone, and welcome to the PPC show brought to you by AdStage. This week, JD is across the pond. Where are you at this week, JD?
Across the pond. I like it. So I'm out here in Brighton, UK. So I did about an hour south of London by train. And so we're like right on the shore. It's beautiful. And we're out here speaking as part of the Brighton SEO conference. They launched a whole day called the Paid Social Show, where they had quite a few people presenting today. And we're joined by two of them in my hotel room getting scandalous.
This is a Friends of the Podcast episode. We just copy everything that Scott and Kara do. They just introduced Friends of the Podcast. We now have Friends of the Podcast. So what the show, did you guys speak about paid social, I assume, since you're all paid social wizards? And what did you talk about?
Yeah, so I talked, of course, on Quora ads, and we're joined by AJ Wilcox and Dwayne Brown. AJ, who are you and what did you talk about?
I run B2Links.com, the LinkedIn ads agency, and I, of course, talked about LinkedIn ads.
Dwayne, I run Take Some Risk, and we talked all about Pinterest and why it's a great place if you're in e-commerce.
Yeah, so all three of us talking about other things, the other 35% of your ad spend budget that we're all trying to get.
Yeah, that's great. Hello. We're so sick of hearing about Google and Facebook, although we're about to talk about them for like 20 minutes. But they're in the news a lot, usually for the wrong reasons. But that's great. We have like the LinkedIn expert, the Pinterest expert, the Quora expert. Yeah. If you guys have any secret information that we don't have, feel free to throw it in. And then what is Brighton? I mean, Brighton, is it lovely and sunny there right now, or is it horrible and raining?
You know, I think we really lucked out. It's actually like beautiful right now. I think it's 10 degrees out Celsius. So I think we're in somewhere like the mid 50s. It's sunny, kind of windy, but it's pretty nice, I guess, for Brighton in April.
It's gorgeous nice. For Brighton. When it rains, and this is nice.
10 Celsius could be anything in my brain. That means nothing. I'm like, times 2 plus 30, 5/6 raised to the third.
Well, AJ has a really good scale. AJ, tell us what it
is. All right, I've got the Celsius scale down for you. 10 is cold, 20 is nice, 30 is hot, 40 is blistering.
Oh, okay. So you don't even convert it. You've just created like a simple Celsius scale. I like it. This is real PPC power tips right here. So the first order today we're going to talk about is Facebook. Shocker. More Facebook news. This one, you know, last week they really got destroyed. There was like 5 negative stories that ran. This week there's a great Washington Post article, which isn't just a hit piece. Mostly talks about some of the positive steps they've been making to try to improve combating fake news and handling all the spam on their site. So this was a really long article and interesting, but it's really the core message is that they are now trying to put in these, you know, new pieces to the algorithm that are going to get rid of items in the newsfeed that look like they're fake news or because they suddenly trend like outrageously and they come from sites that Facebook's never heard of before. And they're trying to make it more clear. So if someone keeps changing their website name, because I guess a lot of these spammy sites like just keep changing names, and there's groups like Facebook groups that keep changing their names. So they try to stay ahead of the algos. Facebook's now going to like show you if any of these names change. So according to this article, at least Facebook's making some good progress for once.
Yeah, and as we talked about, you know, was it last week, the week before, with their new ads library, that's also going to really help if they're running ads or boosting posts. You'll be able to see all of those as long as there's like a, you know, political intent behind them. And you also get to see all of those name changes, which is the really key one. But I think all of us on our side is going, is this really going to make a difference? Are these tweaks, like, are we talking massive traffic drops? Or are these like margins? Are we talking 1% or 2%? Or is this going to be like, no, we're actually going to get rid of this? Because as we know, that stuff makes them a lot of money.
And the stuff that gets affected that looks like it's kind of fake news, trending fake news, doesn't get removed. It just gets reduced. So the traffic in the newsfeed gets reduced so they don't get blocked per se, although it's effectively the same thing. And in that article, there's actually a link to a third party, actually University of Michigan did a study, the Social Media Responsibility Group. School of Information Center for Social Media Responsibility at University of Michigan did a really nice study, published a white paper, and they came up with this concept called the IFI quotient. Like the site's you know, it could be real, it could be fake. It's not sure. So they're not sure if it's good or bad. So they have this iffy quotient and they apply it to, you know, traffic on these sites from Twitter, Facebook, and they measure over time how much traffic goes to these iffy sites. And, you know, according to their numbers, Facebook is doing much better. You know, pre-election, they measured like pre-election last time and leading up to the 2016 election versus now. And supposedly they're doing far better on the iffy scale. So hopefully this election cycle will not be filled with fake.
Don't you just love it how when Facebook sees people doing fake news, they apply the same formula to them as the 20% rule for those who have more than 20% text in their images? It's right. The same treatment.
Right. I know. Like, you put too much text in your ad, you're treated the same way as someone who is like fundamentally dismantling the American government.
That's right.
Speaking of, if you want to fundamentally upset the U.S. government or maybe any government, you should be on Instagram, because apparently we talk about Facebook newsfeed and Twitter trolls and all this kind of social media toxicity in the comment section on YouTube. We don't talk about Instagram, and apparently that's where you could be out there running porn, selling drugs, promoting alt-right conspiracy theories, and no one really cares. So the article from, there's two of them, one from TechCrunch and one from The Atlantic, were really interesting. I had no idea that it was like Troll City over on Instagram if you're in the right kind of places.
Here's a picture of making committing treason.
Right.
It's drugs. I've seen people tweet about that the last year, like drugs and Instagram. You just like type in opium and find drugs and buy drugs. And
whoa.
People don't care because not enough people realize that like Facebook owns Instagram and it's just as evil. But it's like your little brother who gets away with murder because he's your little brother.
Yeah.
And he's much cooler.
He's much cooler.
Yeah.
This one was huge. And I think, you know, I wonder how much this was in response to Taylor's article. So Taylor writes for the Atlantic. She's doing a really great job. Definitely like keep track of what she's doing. And she's like on Twitter. And so when I saw this one come out, I was just shocked more than anything else, because what she did for this experiment was like, I'm just going to start following alt-right and to see what happens. And then Instagram picked up on that and they started showing her more accounts to follow. And it got deeper and deeper and deeper. And so you can see how this engagement algorithm is optimizing maybe not for the best things, right?
Yeah.
And how people build an echo chamber on their platform, you know, in their whole feed becomes this. So it's kind of scary.
Yeah, that Atlantic article is frightening.
They do good stuff in the Atlantic. It's good articles.
Hey, yeah. I mean, there is a secret plot by the deep state to take down Trump, okay? I read about it on Instagram.
I mean, it's funny, too, because in the article they show you, you know, a bunch of, like, tweets from other folks, and it's, or maybe their Instagram posts. No, they're tweets. And it's a lot about, like, these kids now who are, like, you know, teenagers, and they see this stuff and they believe it. And it's all classic conspiracy theory stuff. So if you've ever talked to anybody who is kind of conspiracy theorist, they don't identify as alt-right. So even one of the like main groups, there's a big like on their profile page, it says like alt-right, not welcome. And then they proceed to just support all the main kind of alt-right conspiracy theories. So they're just, you know, they're using this message. We're not alt-right. We're just, you know, freedom fighters or whatever. And, you know, the New Zealand shooting was a hoax by the liberal deep state. And then they just go right into the same stuff. And it's just, it's worse when you see kids do it. Cause like when it's adults, you get like, at least personally, when I see adults, I'm like, F you, buddy, come on. Like, but whatever, you're an idiot. You'll believe anything. But then you see kids, you're like, they don't really have a chance, right? Their brains are half developed. They're 12 years old. And if God forbid their parents are already alt-right, like forget it. They're going to grow up like those freaky brainwashed kids.
So they're gaslighting you basically. They're telling you they're not doing what they're exactly doing. So you think you're crazy.
Exactly. Yeah. So Instagram needs to get their crap together, because who knew that it's just kind of wide open. You could like do whatever you want on Instagram. So there were some changes that Zuckerberg did announce. So like in the Discover feed and where Instagram was recommending you content, they got rid of things like hashtag porn and hashtag opioid and those things that you used to be able to just type in and see content. Now that content doesn't exist. If you type in those things to Instagram, you'll get empty pages. And in the Discover section, if you're on the edge of having inappropriate content, they won't show you in Discover. because, you know, that's on Snap too. If you ever use Snapchat or Instagram, you go to the Discover page, it's like always borderline porn. It's like naked women. And I'm like, oh, God forbid I had a kid or something. And I'm like, open up Instagram. And it's like, oh, okay. Never open Instagram, Johnny. Like, just so I noticed it. And apparently now regulators are starting to notice it. So Zuckerberg announced they're going to like crack down on getting rid of, basically just putting standard guidelines for content that exists everywhere else into Instagram.
Yeah, ooh. I think that's a welcome change. I'm happy to see that.
And then, you know, Twitter's probably loving all this because we haven't talked about trolls on Twitter in like months. Hopefully that's because the changes they're making are actually having an impact. In this TechCrunch article, it went over just the latest step that Twitter's taken to help get rid of the spammers on the platform. You know, last summer, we all know the giant purge that went down. They kicked off a bunch of bot users. And now, I think you actually tweeted about this. You can't follow as many people anymore, right?
Yeah, I didn't even know that you could follow 1,000 people in a day. That's more than I follow total. But like, you could follow 1,000 people in a day, and they cut it down to 400. Now, it sounds great, and it's still, I just don't know what that means. Like, where did they find that these trolls or these bots were just mass following people? I really wish what they would cut down on are the people that like follow, then unfollow, then follow, then unfollow. Those are the people I want gone.
Right. Well, and that is definitely a tactic because I had my Instagram account hacked maybe 3 years ago. And the way I knew is because I kept getting all these followers. And I was like, what? And yeah, because it, especially a few years ago, it was like, I don't know, 20 people and they were all like a few friends. But what happens is they hack your account and then, yeah, they just go follow everyone because, you know, some percentage of people just follow back the people who follow them. So they just follow everyone and then they get, you know, 5% follow backs and that's how they get their audience up. So it's combating that practice. And there is a good post by some of the like nerdy folks over at Twitter about why they chose 400, because there are corporate accounts that like use DMs a certain way, which requires you to follow them. And so they pick 400 for a very specific reason that they think will have kind of high impact to cut back spam, but not limit some of the like corporate users' ability to use Twitter.
Nice. It's a nice number, but let's be honest, like Twitter could be doing other things like get rid of alt-right stuff or get rid of people who harass and bully. Yep. Maybe follow their own terms of service and not say this isn't harassment if they're targeting a woman, a person of color, anyone who's pretty much on a straight white dude. Like Twitter could do so many things, and yet this is what they announce. It's like masturbation at best and a circle jerk at worst, and no one should care.
Wow.
We do have Scott on the podcast.
The
speechless.
Yeah, that's a good one. No, I mean, look, you're right. I mean, Twitter has, I always wonder when there's things that are just so blatant and obvious, like if you just spend 5 minutes on Twitter, you can, you know, find out the people who are just there to be toxic and they're just there to insult people instantly. And then, you know, every now and then I'll go and look at their profile because I'm like, are you real? Or are you like, is everything you say just negative? You know, because the bots are just meant to seed arguments like a lot of times, and they're not right or left. They're just like, oh, I put in super controversial stuff, or you just like an a-hole that's on Twitter. But it's like I could figure it out pretty easily, like, oh yeah, these are the people I don't want in here, and like, you know, I block them or I, you know, mute them. You would think Twitter, it wouldn't be that hard for Twitter to just be like, man, people keep blocking this person because they write insulting stuff, let's just take them out of like comments and feeds and make it one of those like restricted content ones. Or I don't know. It seems like it should be easier, but you're right. Like this tiny little step, and we're like applauding them because it's like, it's something.
Our standards are not very high, and they could do it. They just don't want to, because like YouTube, engagement numbers are what people care about. It's like, oh, how many DAUs did you have? Or what was your engagement on this tweet? That's all that they care about because it helps their stock price. If you told them tomorrow they had to get rid of the toxic people because more people would join, Jack would do it tomorrow and he'd turn the whole ship around, but he don't care. Because he lives in like billionaire land.
Right. Well, that's the problem with basically all social media too, right? I mean, the best content is usually this super toxic, you know, if it leads, it bleeds concept of headlines. Clickbait works. That's why it's clickbait, because people click on it and that's how you measure success and get paid largely. So it is this conundrum where the more they kick off these folks, the less money they make. But it's actually on Pivot, because we talk about it often. Kara interviewed I forget her name, she's the CEO of Patagonia, who I think most liberals are in love with right now, because Patagonia is like keeps taking the moral high ground in a very like authentic way for years. But she said, you know, these guys, I forget what she called them, weenies, like all these CEOs, yeah, like weenies. Jack, and you make, you're billionaires now. Like, can't you now like say, we're going to make a decision that's the right thing to do, not the profitable thing to do. Like, we've made our billions. Like, you still don't have like the guts to make a stand even after you've become a billionaire. Like, what will it take?
Yeah, good point. Yeah. When is enough money? Like, when all of your retirement is covered and your kids' retirement and your kids' kids' retirement, can you start making decisions that just benefit humanity?
Well, or just be like, you know what? I'm a baller. I'm a billionaire. I'm going to start doing stuff to change the world for the better. Like,
Elon.
Save us, Elon.
Right. Exactly. That is him. He says, I want to go broke. I might bankrupt all these companies, but I want to do some interesting stuff. But I mean, Zuckerberg, I wonder too, like, you're, I don't know, 20 billion, how much is he worth? Like, isn't he sick of going to meetings and Congress and being like, we're going to take privacy very seriously? It's like, don't you just want to be like, get on your jet and like hang out and be like, you know what, let's do something crazy and really change the world.
Especially when he plans on donating all those billions. It's like, hey man, like, you could just like make a little less now by doing the right thing.
True. Right. Wow, Dwayne, you got us we're political now. But I still use Twitter. I think we all do. So the other thing we found out, at least I found out, is Twitter is building, or they have built, a prototype app. So last week we talked about the new tags that show up on Twitter to show you who like the author is versus like someone replying to a tweet. JD is in the beta. I am not in the beta. I then found out all these features are first in this Twitter prototype app, which is, it's Twitter, no I, no E, which, Dwayne, I guess you were saying that was their original name. Was that Twitter's name in the day?
Yeah, back in the day, there were no vowels, because when Twitter launched, that was like Flickr, no vowels. Twitter, no vowels. It was a very hot trend in the early 2000s, late 2000s.
Nice. So there you go. So they went either back to that, or they've always had this prototype app, but you can apply to get access to it, and I did. And they have a bunch of other cool features, like swiping instead of hitting reply buttons, which, if you know, you're like in the dating app generation, which I don't think any of us are, but if you are, then you're probably like, I swipe, I don't push buttons.
I still date, I'm single, so, you know, I understand the challenges.
I think with that one too, that one's actually kind of interesting. So within the new app, right, so they updated the conversation, and so the conversation is now a thread, and so you can actually see replies to certain things, which is really nice. So you can kind of see, I think, two or three deep within a comment section, but within the comments, you can't see the engagement on the actual comment. So that's actually really interesting as well. So whenever you're looking through it, you just kind of see conversation happening. You have to like click on that specific tweet just to see if people liked it or retweeted it. So they're kind of getting rid of that engagement aspect within the conversation. I don't know if they just found it to be too much or too clouded, or if people were just joining in conversations for the engagement. So it does feel a little bit more authentic. I do actually applaud that. But they also still have that author tag, which we talked about last week. And then I think the other part with that one is you'll get to the one that I haven't really. So outside of all that, it looks the exact same. Like, it, that is like, that is pretty much it for the beta. Apparently they did some stuff with the Twitter camera, and they added some dark mode and then profile views. I can't, the profile preview looks about the same to me, but the how they do it is really cool. So it actually comes from the bottom. So if you're like in a conversation, you're like, who's this AJ at? What's he doing jumping in on this conversation? You can click on his name and his profile comes up from the bottom, like not a new page. It just kind of comes up and you're like, oh, AJ, cool. And you can follow him, or you can like push it back down and continue the conversation. So,
or do what you should do when AJ's followed you and just block.
Block.
JD's one of those troll, or JD, AJ, you have, there's too many acronym names in the room. AJ is one of those people on Twitter that you just got to block immediately.
That's right. Nothing good comes out of this, Ginger.
Not true. You should follow everybody in this room. Maybe we'll put all your hashtags in the show notes. So if you want to sign up, well, first off, there's a woman who's running the program. Her Twitter handle is Pandemona, Pandemona, I think. but at least if you go somewhere, they posted details about like all the features that are in the beta app, which ones are moving over to like the actual Twitter app. The thing I like is that I remember Snapchat's redesign, which was this big mystery, and they worked on it for years and they were all freaking out. And then of course they released the new app and everybody went crazy and hated it, and their usage numbers went down and celebrities were like, we're moving off Snap. Twitter's doing the opposite. They've been around the block for a while. They understand you don't do big product releases unless you're like Steve Jobs. Apple is the only one. Everybody, or maybe in the video game industry, I think they still do it. But everybody else wants incremental product. Give me something. Let me use it. Feedback. Change it. Iterate, iterate, iterate. And that's what Twitter is doing. Then once a feature is fully baked, they move it into the core experience rather than Snapchat, who just drops a new app on everyone and everyone instantly. which is a good lead into the next way. Yeah. Why don't you do Snap since you're such a Snap fan and you put all your money in the Snap?
Oh, I love Snap. I've got so much Snap stock. It's incredible. So it's the best stock you guys can own.
Is this your Trump?
Tell me.
I second mortgaged my house after I heard last week's episode or 2 weeks episode.
Yeah. Okay. So coming out from eMarketer, it looks like, really maybe to like no one's real surprise, Snap's usage is going to continue to decline in the U.S. What they showed was 191 million daily active users in Q1 of 2018. And then come Q4, it was at 186. So they lost 5 million users. It's about 2%. I'm still like, meh. It's not that I don't really care. It doesn't seem like it's a lot. I mean, 2% is a lot. If you lost that every year, right? That would suck. But
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say it's all about how you monetize the people that you do have.
And that's where Evan, their CEO, says, "Don't worry about those numbers. We got the young ones. So in the young demographic, we are growing like crazy. Because of course, if you're a young social network, you don't want to be flat. And Snapchat is a very young social network. So flat is terrible. But if they could show growth in that demographic that they're known for, which are, you know, under 25, then at least they'll keep investors happy." And we talked about some of the new things they announced at their first partner day, which I was not invited to because I could have wrote a great blog post comparing like all the partner days, because I go to like the Facebook partner day, the Google partner day, the LinkedIn partner day, because we're ad partners with all of them. One day I always say I want to write a post about like who has the best lunch, who has the best like stage setup, like
where's the best swag,
right? And I Snapchat from the photo looked like, of course, they overspent and had this like beautiful, luxurious, whatever. But and then LinkedIn, it's like you're in a conference room with like 10 people, and they give you like
with a hard hat,
right? That's true. Their new building is beautiful. There's just not a lot of us in the partner program. AJ is in it, and AdState is in it, and there's maybe like, there's a lot of probably logos in there, but there's only like 5 partners that actually build anything to LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I digress. So in that announcement from Snap, they also talked about their AR studio. So apparently you can do a lot of cool stuff to build your own AR lens, which we knew and we've talked about, but they're adding some new stuff. So you can do hand tracking, body tracking, pet tracking. So a lot of the things you see in the new filters on Snapchat, or lenses, I should call them, on Snapchat, that are kind of cool and come out. You can do all that stuff if you want as a community lens creator. And now they're going to add this thing called Landmarker. And Landmarker lets you basically build like Pokemon Go. Well, instead of putting Pokemon on things, you could like put random signs on top of buildings, or, you know, you can kind of place things in real life that are virtual. So it really is starting to bridge to true AR, more so than just kind of putting a mask on somebody's face.
Do people care about AR though? Like, we've talked about like AR and VR for years, and, you know, even years ago, like IKEA had the, oh, you can use like AR or VR or whatever to project what your room will look like with our furniture, or you can do this. And like, does the average person really care?
No.
At the end of the day, like, it sounds nice for a techie, and I love tech, but does anyone really care?
No, it's still too early.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've tried using AR ads, you know, like, yeah, you could see the Movado watch on your hand and stuff like that, but it always is glitchy. It doesn't look real, and it's like so hokey. It doesn't add any real value. I don't think I'm ever like, wow. Even actually, AdStage, for our last outing, we went to a AR museum. So you get a headset and you're like in a room that has physical like things, like a, you know, big tree and a waterfall. And then the AR goggles project things throughout the room. And it was cool, but that was about it. It was cool for like 5 to 10 minutes. And it was kind of like, okay, enough of like, I get it. There's a butterfly flying right in front of my face. And they tried to put signs you could read and stuff. So it was cool, but it's still like, you know, we're playing Pong. Like, okay, this video game's fun for like 20 minutes and then I'm going to move on. but I can see it coming. And then also they announced one other thing, which I thought is amazing. And I can't believe this is a feature. In Snapchat, you can take a photo of a math equation. It will scan it and solve it for you. So I'm convinced this is what every kid does to get their math.
That's pretty cool. That is exactly why you're going to keep the youths.
Man, yeah. Kids don't know how good they have it. Do you guys remember long form? Like, that was the worst.
Show your work.
Show your work.
Don't just tell us the answer at the end. Tell us how you got to the answer.
Ah, the youths.
Now the show your work is going to be a screenshot of Snapchat.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, a picture of you taking a like screenshot or something. Show your work. Well, here's me scanning this in. It's we had no internet and no any of this. So yeah, you had like a book and a pencil.
TI-83, man.
Dude, that was tech.
That was an upgrade from the TI-82.
Yeah. Right. But that was like high school. Even I mean, maybe middle school. I don't know. You might have been smarter than me. I didn't get one of those till high school. So most of my math was a pencil and paper, and then eventually you got a calculator. But even then, like usually, you were supposed to be able to do everything.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Last story. This one is actually fairly old. It's a month old, but I don't think we ever talked about it. Google Ads put out a new editor. So I don't know. Are there any Google Ads search people that use editor in the room?
Well,
I do.
I think the thing that we were talking about is how bold it was. They just dropped Google. They're just calling it ads editor and they started back over at 1.0, but you just got to love. Yeah. It says the ads editor. Like we know it's Google. No one else. It's us.
On a little shade of Bing.
I think there is
a Bing editor. And I do use that for work.
I know.
You know, even in the office, or like when you do changes, make sure you specify if it's a Bing change or a Google change, so we know where to look. Like this is a bit of a we're better than you, Bing, and we know it, and we're not going to use Google anymore on things.
Yeah, that's a little fancy. You know, this also happens on Messenger apps. If you use an Android phone, everybody names their messaging app Messenger. So you end up with a Facebook app called Messenger, a Google app called Messenger, your phone, if it's a, you know, whoever, Samsung has a thing called Messenger. So when you're trying to set it up, you're like, I got three messengers. Which one's the real messenger?
Yeah. I think even on iPhone, they call it Messenger.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. So we have, at EdStage, we have a Google Sheets add-on. And we're going to, JD, you'll be very happy because you wanted us to do this when you were here and we never did. But we're going to relaunch it for like, I think it's $30 a month, super cheap. Woo! Yeah. Because we built it years ago. We now have a bunch of people using it. We don't monetize it at all, but we want to make it just easy to buy. Because now we have, you know, credit card swipe and self-service, all this fun stuff. So maybe it's not live yet. It'll be announced in search engine land, or, you know, Jenny's going to write something about it. But maybe by the time this goes live, this is the leak.
You heard it live. If you made it this far in the podcast,
you deserve it.
Now at Wikipedia, look at Superman.
Basically, they have no competitors. We noticed in the space. You made this point a long time ago. I'm not bringing it up to plug us, although I should have. Bring it up because we were thinking of what do we name it in the App Store? Because right now it's like the, you know, Ad Stage, Google Sheets, like advertising ad. It's like way too long. And you know, the CEO Sahil was like, let's just name it like ads data, or you know, like just generic, like pretend like we own the category and just call it ads or something like that. And I was like, huh. And now Google's doing the same thing for editor, so maybe that's not a bad idea.
Well, Paul, just call it Messenger and move on.
Right, well, think of all the installs we'll get and the very very confused users. My messages here, but LinkedIn spend, interesting. Well, if you haven't used Editor, the new Editor 1.0, which is the Google Ads Editor, it has a lot of new features in it. One of the most interesting is it can now run some rules that are essentially alerts, and they can do some pretty neat stuff, like find out if you have like a video campaign running, but it's not targeting the Google Video partners, or a video campaign has to start and end date, but it's using average daily budget. So a lot of these like settings screw ups that you might have done. I always think of like, you know, if you're running in normal paid on Google, if you're running like ad sets and you have no ads approved because, you know, you had like three ads and they all got disapproved and you haven't got around to it yet. So you have an empty ad set. So it's kind of those types of things. It's just like next level. So, but I don't know, Dwayne, since you use this, do you ever use any of the, these like deep alerts?
Yeah, at times. I mean, we set up alerts in like GA and where it makes sense for clients, you know, drops in traffic. You don't have this running. There's like a spike in spend. There's a spike in traffic just to help us stay on top of like someone put $1,000 and they should put $100 for a budget, which happens at times with, you know, not today, not me, but at times junior people make those mistakes.
Right. Not at your agency, but I've heard it other places.
Other places. You know, once I had years ago, this is like in 2009, I took some stuff from Google. I gave it to my Yahoo rep because Yahoo was a thing back then. And I was like, here's our budget for the month. They spent their budget in a weekend and then I had to fight with them to get the money back. And it took a few phone calls and all the yell, but I got the money back. So alerts, notifications, whatever you want to call it, those are good things to set up because it's not about if it's going to happen. It's all about when it's going to happen and saving yourself some trouble.
Yeah, I thought this one was pretty cool. Fred had a really good article for this one talking about some new custom rules. I liked this one. A video campaign has a start and end date, but is using average daily budget, right? So that would be a good one to be alerted for because maybe you want to do a lifetime budget there. So yeah, there's some good stuff there.
And the...
I'm so glad we're going over this a month after release because the... As I'm sure many of you know who've been using Google for a long time, the releases were never stable when they very first came out. You always had to let people complain about it for a little while before you decided to install.
It's like upgrading your OS on Apple. Like you never upgrade right away. Exactly. You got to wait.
I never upgrade any tech right away, software, hardware, from anyone because I don't trust it. I wait like 2 months at least.
not me, man. I love clearing out notifications.
Yeah, it is. It's a two types of people thing. Because I used to be on the, ooh, it's a new thing. Let me try it. But then now that I have like 87 SaaS tools and everything's integrated and if anything breaks, it's like, you know, a major pain. So now I'm in the category of like, I don't want anything new unless I have to upgrade. All right. So I think we're going to do wins and fails because we love Pivot and we copy everything they do. So we wanted to end this episode with some wins and fails. So JD, or anyone in the room, do you have any wins or fails for the week?
Yeah, I'd say win is the Twitter beta app. Love the new conversation threading. Much easier to actually follow and have conversations. So that's a win. Brighton SEO, if you've never attended, it's definitely a win. Come on over. I think it's definitely worth your trip. And then fail is Snap always. Every week is a fail for Snap. So yeah.
On Snap real quick, we get a lot of requests for integrations in our product, and I've been seeing a lot of Snapchat ones pop up. So I don't know if their partner conference has got people more interested, but like they're legitimately a contender behind Quora and Pinterest, of course. But
that's right.
Still, yeah.
Come on, Paul, integrate with this so we can do some co-marketing like a podcast or something.
Well, we're like 75% done, but I'm, you know, trying to get some leverage from your marketing people so they like give us something. So can you like work it out so we get like something better than a blog post and like a, you know, send us a check for $100,000 or something?
Jeez, if we had $100,000, Paul, like, but yeah, let's talk, you and me. Let's cut out the middleman and you and I can have a conversation about what we can do.
Nice. I like where this podcast is heading. Wins and fails. What do you got on LinkedIn or Pinterest?
Yeah, AJ's got to win. I think all three of us on the way over here to the UK, we all got an entire row to ourselves, so we actually laid down and slept.
Up top to that. Overnight flight with an entire row to yourself. All three of us got it.
Win.
Yes, super win. That was big.
What about Dwayne?
I was going to say Bing Ads released a new ad extension, which is called like, I think actually it's just called an ad extension where you can put like a CTA button on your ad, which is kind of cool. It's just nice to see them try to put out products or features that are different than Google and try to like be their own person at times. Because sometimes they've got to obviously, they're forced to copy Google. So they stay a certain parity. So it's easy to import stuff from Google to Bing. So it's good to see Bing trying to do things on its own a little bit at times.
That's a nice, win for Bing. And then we're all wins. I have a win for Amazon. There is an article in the Wall Street Journal, which I don't have access to. So I read a Motley Fool article, which I try never to do because Motley Fool has the most spammy headlines about how you're going to become a millionaire investing in all their stock recommendations, which I always think, why would you tell me? Just invest your money and become a millionaire. But anyway, so they had a great kind of overview of the Wall Street Journal article about Amazon's ad business. It's growing like wildfire. WPP was on record for spending $300 million on Amazon last year, which is 2 to 3x as much as they did a year ago. And they said 75% of that budget actually came from Google. So it's the first news of Amazon not just growing to be the third largest ad business, which we've talked about a lot over the years, and dominating shopping. So if you're doing shopping ads, you have an Amazon strategy. But now people are saying, there's one person even mentioning, like, they might just go into ad, like full on into ads and try to become a competitive ad network like they did with AWS, where they, you kind of see them growing momentum. You don't think it's that big of a deal. Then suddenly they're the number one AWS or like, you know, cloud hosting provider in the world. People are starting to wonder if they're going to just try to take on advertising in general, because it's like a, you know, I forget, $200-300 billion global industry. And they have, you know, tremendous reach between all their hardware. They just bought a drone delivery company. So it looks like they really are going to start doing drone delivery soon. So, so big win over to Amazon, because they're cementing themselves in the number three spot and possibly trying to take down Google or Facebook.
I mean, it's so fast too. I mean, you got to give them credit. I mean, who would have thought that you could take on one? Who would have thought you could take on Google? Facebook came, was like, no, we can do that. Then you had duopoly, which lasted a couple of years. Now you have like a triopoly that fully emerged like all last year. So we're in the thick of it. It's kind of fun to be an advertiser and to like kind of think triopoly. Of course, all of us talked about Pinterest, LinkedIn, and Quora, and we're all like, hey guys, remember us? Don't forget about us. Diversify your ad budgets.
I think it's good for Amazon, but I think it's bad for, I think, us as marketers, because the marketers who go all in on Amazon are doing a disservice to their customers or their clients or the brands they work with, because you don't get email addresses when you drive sales on Amazon. You don't get the data you need to make informed decisions. And that is a problem that places like WWP don't care about, because they just want to spend clients' money and keep the client. They don't care if this hurts the client in the next 2 or 3 years. They just need to make this quarter, next quarter work so they keep the client longer. So it's a win for Amazon, but it's a loss for those of us who care about data and understanding like why this person bought, as well as the fact that like not every brand does well in Amazon. Like usually cheaper brands do well in Amazon, or brands that sell consistently. Like you wouldn't use Amazon maybe as like an outlet store all the time, because you won't have tons of reviews on Amazon, which means it'll be harder to drive sales on Amazon. So it's like good for Amazon, bad for the industry if we think about like the future, not just the next two quarters.
True. Yeah, there's definitely a conversation we had about Amazon in general, whether it's good or evil as you know, owning global commerce as well. But I do think it depends on the brand. So I'm totally with you. Most of my friends who run agencies and do e-com, paid search, paid social, you know, have that talk with the customers, like, I need to be on Amazon. They're like, look, you think you want to be on Amazon, but they're going to take a big cut of your profits. They never make it to the website, so you can't retarget. There's no tracking. You know, there's a lot of downsides. But if you're big enough and you're like, look, I'm the Gap, or I'm, you know, some major brand, like I own my customer, I have a brand. It's a way to get more sales at volume. My margins are all figured out. You know, I could see, especially in like electronics categories or, you know, certain categories where, you know, you already have your market. I could see how Amazon is pretty critical, but certainly if you're smaller, especially, and you don't have a brand that's a top 500 known brand, Amazon sounds great until you look at all the negative sides of Amazon. Mm-hmm. And I don't think any of that's going to change. You know, I was thinking in terms of we're all trying to do audience, you know, retargeting audiences, lookalike audiences, and you know, this trick is how do you get everybody to your website so you can like find out who your audience really is and then target them on all these networks so you own it. And there's this whole new category of customer data platforms or CDPs trying to solve this. But it's such a tug of war between all these networks want to keep that data hidden so they could optimize and, you know, control the audience. And then as consumers, we want to own our brand. And it's just such a tricky web we have to weave in marketing, isn't it, Jens?
So true.
Yeah.
All right, I've got to lose if I can throw this one in there. LinkedIn just recently made an announcement about an integration between Marketo, LinkedIn, and Adobe. So really cool. I'm a huge fan of data integrations, targeting integrations. All of this is great. The coverage around it, though, was terrible because they didn't share anything. They wrote a whole article, a whole press release that just literally said nothing. It was just buzzword after buzzword. And then, of course, all the outlets who wanted to cover it and cover the announcement, they had nothing to say. So their articles just went around and around in circles. Guys, when you make announcements, please just like tell people what is actually valuable and don't write an article if there's nothing to say.
Hallelujah on that one. We read that article and I think I made the joke of like, I don't know what they just said. I mean, and I follow this industry for fun and for a living, and I still couldn't figure out what can you do with all of these integrations other than like, you know, dynamically provide value to your key demographic, something or others. So I was like, what? Well, I think that's all the news we have this week. We've done wins and fails. We have guests of the podcast. Let us know what you think. If you like this free form, we didn't do an introduction in the front. That was a big change for us. If you like it, let us know on the secret Twitter app that only a few of us will be on. Or if you want our Sheets app, you could DM me. And you could always head over to blog.adsh.io if you just want to get the newsletter and get a link to this podcast and these headlines every week. So enjoy your week, everyone. And thank you over there in Brighton.
Party on. Woo!
All right. See you, Paul.